tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 17th of April 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. We've reached another week, which means it's time for a roundup of the week's news stories, particularly the most absurd ones, which we used to do and call Clown World in Review, but I no longer have my clown horn here so I can no longer make that honk honk sound. But I am pleased to say we do have our regular co-host here today for Clown World in Review, and that is Grandpa Dan, all the way from Texas. Grandpa, good day, sir. How are you doing?
I'm honking along, and I have, of course, looked at our stories for today. And I'm glad so many of these stories, the UK is so good at providing material for us. As I've said this before, it seems to be running behind on the trends in the UK. I'm surprised that they don't have y'all still masking up and social distancing for the COVID over there. That's about the only thing I find surprising at this point, Sven.
I do try to find some American stories, but there is just like there's just not very many of them at the moment. I have a look at Breitbart, and it's all about Iran. It's all serious stuff, and I don't really want to do black and white crime. There's plenty of that. But then if you go and have a look at British news, you have a look at GB News, they pretty much have an article every day, which really sort of highlights just how absurd everything is. We've got three articles today that we're going to try and fit in. And this first one is to do with the fact that children are now turning up at school and they're not toilet trained. They don't know how to dress themselves. They don't know how to talk, some of them. A third of them, I believe it is, are just not toilet trained at all, and the parents are expecting the teachers to change their diapers. I mean, it's absolutely shocking, and I think the only reason that can be really is because the parents are busy on their smartphones all the time instead of paying attention to their children. So I would have thought that they needed to work on the parents, getting the parents to toilet train their children before getting them to go to school. But instead of that, what the Education Department and the National Health Service have decided to do, they've decided to make a rap song about it. Yes, a hip-hop song to try and get the children to, I guess, learn how to use the toilet themselves. Parents have been told to toilet train their children before starting school by using rap music. The Department for Education has partnered with rapper MC Grammar to produce a new song aimed at helping parents prepare their children for starting school. The track, titled Steps for School, addresses growing concerns about youngsters arriving at reception without essential skills. Teachers have raised alarms that more than a third of children are beginning their school journey unprepared for the classroom environment. The initiative forms part of the government's Best Start in Life campaign, which seeks to ensure young children reach key developmental milestones before entering formal education. MC Grammar, whose real name is Jacob Mitchell, is a former teacher who has previously created educational music content for children. The collaboration represents an unconventional approach to delivering parenting guidance through an accessible and engaging format. Is that really what you would call rap music? The rap covers fundamental abilities that children should master before their first day in the classroom, including using the toilet independently, washing their hands properly, and dressing themselves. Sharing toys with others and developing proper listening skills are also addressed in the track, which aims to make learning these competencies enjoyable for families. And I thought, well, I'll just have a listen to this. And I thought, what are they going to do? Are they going to sort of talk children through how it is you go to the toilet, how you use the toilet? Not at all. It just mentions going to the toilet in it. I mean, I don't see how this is going to help parents to toilet train their children if all it does is say you sort of go to the toilet in it, which is all it does. It just has like a little rapping rhyme basically about going to the loo and then washing your hands. I mean, surely there is more to toilet training than that. Shouldn't they be encouraging parents to use a smaller version of a toilet perhaps, or a little step that the child can use? Nothing like that. They just made a rap song about it. And also, I mean, could this be racism that we see here, that they're using a predominantly black form of music to target children that are unable to go to the toilet themselves? Are they saying that it's mainly black juniors that are unable to go to the toilet themselves? I don't think they would be doing that, but it does really sort of leave them open to accusations of racism, I think. Grandpa, what do you make of this? Did you have a look at the video itself?
I'm a big fan, and I think you are too, if I remember correctly, but I'm a big fan of the old movie Idiocracy, and it's really become real. Now, we'll set aside that, you know, I don't know how much of this conundrum is because of the influx of immigrants. We're going to set that aside to just look at it on its face. And there's absolutely, the one disappointing thing, the most disappointing thing to me, which would have just been the cherry on top for this article, is if MC Grammar would have left the R off, you know, MC Grandma, you know, that would have made it more, more hip hoppy, more, keeping it real. Leave the hard R off, MC Grandma. That would have made it good. More evidence that, you cannot convince me otherwise. People are absolutely getting dumber. The empirical evidence is 100%. It's laid out. We have more technological gadgets. We've got phones. We've got computers. We've got technology. But the population as a whole is getting dumber. You know, it's kind of a little bit disappointing. You know, when you read stories and such, you know, where the elites, you know, these technocrats that have all these, you know, ideas of how they're going to rule the world. And, you know, people get offended. And it is offensive when you read how these people's attitude is towards the common population, you know, and that they're just, you know, useless eaters. Just basically just out there consuming, and they don't serve any real purpose. And that's a real offensive. But then sometimes you look at stuff like this and you think, you know, how wrong are they? You know, how do you send your kid to school and you haven't even taught them to use the toilet? You know, they're not even raising, people aren't even raising their kids. I don't know. People are getting dumber. And then this is setting aside any idea where some of this is obviously going to be related to bringing people in from other cultures that put a lower priority on those sort of things. But again, setting that aside, are these the people? This is why I say there's no point in this idea of quote unquote waking people up, because if this is the mentality of people that you're going to wake up to understand the goings on around them, you're wasting your time. Better off getting a video out from MC Grandma without the R on it. I don't know. It doesn't bode well if this is the average mentality of the population.
Well, I do. I think it's down to the smartphones. I think that the parents are continually looking at the smartphones. They're not looking at their children. And children are missing out on this eye contact that the mother used to have with the child. The mother used to be completely attuned to everything that the child needed, effectively, and their life was devoted to them. Now they're distracted by their smartphones all the time. So the children are missing out on that. They're missing out on that education. And then how can you have a parent that thinks that it's a teacher's responsibility to teach the child to go to the toilet? I mean, what you're effectively saying is we need the state now to teach us how to go to the toilet. You know, I mean, one of the most basic functions of all.
You know, and that is a good point. It's not a smartphone; it's a dumb phone. I've seen material out there that the background, you know, which the light they use on your computer screens and your phone screens, is actually basically it's a hypnotic light. The tone they use, it hypnotizes people, and that sounds like kooky stuff. But then, like you say, you look at people walking around staring at their phones like zombies, and you think, you know. Could be something to it.
Well, they need to be saying to the parents as well, this is your responsibility. It's not, you know, it's not up for the teachers to do this. It's not up for the state to teach your children how to go to the loo. It's a basic function that people need to know how to do. And I guess what they're doing is these children are being taken into school and they're just soiling themselves. And then the teachers are having to do something about it. And you think, well, what is this child's life like at home then? Do the parents just leave the child like that? Do they not care about it? Do they not want their child to actually be toilet trained? And I think they just haven't got the time. I think they're more interested in playing with their phones. As I say, I've seen studies which show that there's actually a retarded development in children when the parents are on these phones all the time. And if you think years ago, as I say, the concentration was always on the child and whatever the child needed was being attended to by the parent. But now they're just waiting for another message notification on their phone. And they're just constantly on that. And of course, then the child wants to see what's so interesting on the phone. And to keep the child quiet, they give the phone to the child. So the child as well, instead of developing a proper imagination and learning about things and building things with Lego and all the toys that they have, they're just stuck there on the magic lantern, not learning anything at all. And by the time they get to school, they're not able to talk properly. They're not able to go to the toilet. I mean, it's absolutely scandalous. And yet, you know, the state will tell us, oh, education standards haven't fallen. The IQ, average IQ, hasn't fallen. Well, it has. I mean, the specialized IQ, which is like numeracy and the technical things that are involved with our technical civilization, that's gone up slightly. But everything else has gone down. All the inherited parts of IQ, all the rest of the intelligence quotient has actually gone down. So we've been lulled into a false sense of security when we say, well, it's, you know, it's not going down. It is actually going down. It's just a small part of it that isn't. I mean, I would be really rather embarrassed if I had a child that soiled himself at school. When I can remember being a child, and there was a child in our class who had problems. He wasn't quite right, and he did used to soil himself. And I mean, he was the butt of all the jokes. He would be bullied effectively because he soiled himself. And you're talking like children 6-7 years old, and yet now it's a third of them are doing this. I mean, I'm just flabbergasted, really. And the fact that they to try and get to grips with this, they just come out with a rap song. I mean, it's just unbelievable, isn't it? You know, what they really need to be doing is getting on at the parents, not making this song about going to the toilet. I really don't see how that's going to help. Do you want to add anything to that, Grandpa, or shall we move on to our trans story?
Boy, I've been waiting on that one.
I thought you would.
Well, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work raising kids. And you can't do it while you're staring at your phone 24/7 or, you know, being glued to social media. I highly recommend, you know, because you get sucked in. People should cut themselves off. If you cut themselves off social media for a couple of weeks and just see how their lives improve. It's very detrimental. The whole algorithm is programmed to make you addictive. You know, it did. You get into the whole, you know, oh, you know, or you repost it, or do you get a lot of likes for a post, and people get a dopamine hit from that, and it is the whole thing is set up to keep you addicted to it, and like any other addiction, I mean, if you're spending all your time doing drugs, you're not raising your kids. And if you spend all your time staring at your phone to see, you know, what your latest comment on TikTok or whatever is doing, you know, it's an addiction. And yeah, raising kids is a lot of work. It's not a part-time job. it's a lot of work. It's a pain. It has its rewards, but it is. It's a lot of work. You got to put a lot of work into it. You know, house training your kids, just like you do your pet. It's a lot of work. It's a pain in the ass, and it's dirty work. You're cleaning them up. And a lot of people's idea, sadly, of raising their kids is just to let them grow. I mean, they're going to get older. You know, I mean, that part is not growing, is not raising your kids. They will, if enough time goes by, they will get bigger. And, but that's not raising your kids. It's a constant teaching them from very basic things like we're talking about here. Imagine this. If people aren't teaching their kids to use the toilet at a young age, is it realistic that they're teaching them, you know, other things like how the world works, how you interact, how they should interact with other people, what their expectations should be from the people around them and from institutions and things such as that? If you're not teaching them a basic fundamental thing like how to use the toilet, it's safe to say that these kids are not being taught any of these other more complicated things. And then this feeds into, we wonder why we have a dysfunctional society.
Well, there's a lot of talk at the moment about banning under 16s from social media. And that's not really going to get to the root of the problem. If you want to get to the root of the problem, to the heart of the problem, they should be banning the parents of children from using social media while the child is awake, maybe encouraging them not to do that. And then they would have to teach them how to toilet train them. It must be about 7 or 8 years now, Grandpa, since you quit social media. So I know you're actually talking from experience there. So
it's the best thing in the world. No. Yeah, I remember when Elon Musk took over Twitter and you suggested, you know, how to get back on Twitter. And I'm like, not just no, but hell no. If you do without social media, your life will be so much better. When you're doing it, you don't realize it. Being banned, basically blanket banned from every form of social media, that's another one of those greatest blessings that you don't realize at the time that you could ever get. I will never, ever, if anybody pops up on any social media claiming to be me, they're lying, because I can assure you 100%, I have no plans to ever get on social media again. No, it's you realize that it is programming. I mean, you know, they're talking about banning younger people. I would be shocked if they actually do that, because they want you addicted to that social media. Now, they don't want you viewing some of the content. I'm not saying social media is all bad. They don't want you viewing some of the content. That's what the censorship is there for. But as a whole, it is detrimental. It's detrimental to your mental state. It really is. And I just say anybody that's on it, just ban yourself off of it for 2 weeks. Just say, you know, I'm just going to walk away from it for 2 weeks. And you'll find like almost withdrawal symptoms. You know, you feel like, well, this is the time when I'm usually staring at my phone. Get off of it. It is. It's I find it to be a net negative personally.
Yeah, as I say, I think it must have been since about 2017, 2018, since you gave it up. And you used to use it a lot. I mean, you used to be on Twitter a lot. You had a lot of followers. You had a lot of followers on Gab, and then you just gave it up. And I've got to give you credit to you as well. I mean, you kept it up. And so from your experience, that was a positive experience rather than a negative
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, like you say, it started around 2017. You start dodging bans on Twitter, you know, and creating new accounts and stuff. And, as far as Gab, I deleted that account. I wasn't thrown off Gab. I deleted the account because at this point you realize, you know, what are you even doing? You know, I mean, it's just, and then once you get away from it, like I say, you realize that it is literally a psyop, literally a psychological operation. The way social media functions, it is programming. It is not good. And once you get off of it, you realize, my gosh, you know, you look around and it's like, I've got all these other things I could be doing instead of this. And yeah, no, it's go, you know, never looking back, you know, keep on trucking forward. I definitely, like I say, I if you're still on social media and you regularly on a regular basis, I really recommend just wean yourself off 2 weeks. You can always go back. Just go cold turkey for a couple of weeks and see how it affects your life. I would suggest that it would be a net positive.
Oh, yeah, I consciously don't use the smartphone. If I'm waiting somewhere in a queue or sat down waiting for an appointment, I consciously won't pull the phone out and start looking at it. And I'll just look round and see what's going on. And you do. You see, like, these young mothers, and they've got their kids there. The kids are sat around them playing, and they're literally on their phone, just looking at their phone. You know, they need to be paying attention to their children. And toilet training them. Well, as I mentioned, the next story that we've got here is a trans story. Trans woman appointed as endometriosis charity representative steps down after backlash. And I'm sure most people know what endometriosis is, but I'll just repeat it. It's where cells similar to those in the lining of the womb or the uterus grow in other parts of the body, according to the NHS website. It is a chronic condition affecting 1 in 10 women, commonly causing severe pelvic pain, heavy periods and infertility by causing inflammation and scarring. So it's specifically a female health problem. And what this charity did is they appointed a biological man to mansplain this, I guess, to the parliament, because this was actually their special envoy to the British Parliament. Let's have a look at the article here. A trans woman who was appointed as an endometriosis charity representative has stepped down following backlash to the appointment. Steph Richards, 73, confirmed her departure from the parliamentary advisory role for a women's health charity, Endometriosis South Coast, after the move gained public criticism. The former charity representative took to social media to announce the step down, writing, "I would like to confirm that I have recently stepped down from my role as parliamentary advisor to Endometriosis South Coast. It was not a decision taken lightly, but one I believe is in the best interests of myself, the charity, and the vital work it does in supporting those living with endometriosis." Well, what about in the best interests of women, actual biological females, females with a womb? Was it not in their best interests that he stepped down? He said, "I wish the organisation and everyone it serves well." This comes after the former charity representative had dismissed the criticism of the appointment as transphobic. So the legitimate criticism, like, look, you're not a biological female, how can you possibly understand what this is like? Isn't this a bit of an insult to all the women who have this health problem? Their response to that was to call them transphobic, basically use an ad hominem and insult the people making this quite logical criticism. Richards, who founded and was CEO of Translucent, an advocacy group focusing on trans and human rights, will now be working closely with Women's Action Network Portsmouth. So they're still with another organisation that is for women. I mean, what is this Translucent, an advocacy group focusing on trans rights and human rights? What does that have to do with endometriosis? Why were they even picked for this role in the first place? Quite clearly, they were picked to fulfill a diversity quota so that the charity could say, look, we have a trans person working here. We tick all the boxes for diversity hiring. Now, can you please send us more money? Because that's the way that this works. If you're seen to be promoting diversity, then you can get grants from the government for promoting it effectively. But among the criticism of the appointment, Suella Braverman, Reform's spokeswoman for education, skills and equalities, called for the charity to rethink Richard's role last month. She wrote, "It is remarkable that a charity established to advocate for women's health would appoint a man without female anatomy or experience of this disease to speak for those whose suffering is defined by their sex. This regressive decision erases women from their own health issues, replaces lived female experience with male self-identification, and silences the very people your organisation claims to respect." Ms. Braverman also posted on X, "With respect to him, this person is a man. I have no problem with what he wears or what he does in private, but he is a man, and it is not transphobic to say so. It is insulting and inappropriate to the 1.5 million women who suffer with endometriosis for him to have been appointed to speak for them. Now, all of that makes a lot of sense, but I do have to point out, I mean, I have testosterone replacement therapy and I have to talk to a concierge, and the concierge is actually female, and yet it is a men's health issue. And I don't mind that. I mean, you talk to female nurses, female doctors about men's health issues, and I guess the charity was probably thinking like that. Well, it doesn't really matter, does it? But what you're actually talking about here is like a quite a severe problem that affects a large portion of women. And I think it was very insulting for them just to put this trans person there. And it wasn't just like lower down in the charity. This was the parliamentary envoy. This was the person that was supposed to speak to the Houses of Parliament on the problems to do with endometriosis. So, yeah, it's just another example of how absurd things are. Grandpa, any thoughts on this?
Speaking of 2017, Britain is still keeping it going. You know, like they're still doing this. I got to give this person in question kudos. I mean, to still be doing transgender and you're 73 years old, that's dedication. You know, that's dedication that you're that old and you're still doing the trans thing. I'm going to be devil's advocate a little bit here. Of course, it's absurd. We're just having a little fun with it, but be devil's advocate. I mean, there's, you know, I mean, I don't really know how you argue against it. You have male gynecologists, you know, women go to the gynecologist and the doctor is a man. So it's not as though you've got to actually have that stuff. And again, just kind of devil's advocate here, because the whole thing is this whole thing. Probably the whole charity shouldn't exist. It's another money laundering scam. But you could have a male gynecologist. So what difference does it make? And saying that they don't have any experience, you know, the criticism doesn't have any experience with it personally. But that, when does that necessary? You know, this woman that is the White House press secretary spokesperson that goes out there and takes questions from the press, and she's taking all these questions about complicated foreign policy initiatives and war policy and what's going on, and she's, you know, got the approximate intelligence of this glass of water that's sitting next to me. So she doesn't have any idea. She's given her talking points and she goes out there and regurgitates them. But the person themselves is probably does not strike me as extremely intelligent. So, you know, it's kind of rings hollow to me. I mean, it is, the whole thing just is silly because, again, who's doing all of this in 2026? I mean, they may bring it back, but right now they're just running behind the times there in the UK. But yeah, I mean, it's whatever. And again, most of these groups, these advocacy groups, these charities, they're money laundering operations. You know, do we need another group to remind us of women's health issues? You know, I mean, if you have the issue, you go to the doctor and you get it seen about. Is it really necessary that the public has to know about it existing? You know, it doesn't even, you know, it doesn't even matter. You know, we've got all of that over here, too. You know, you have these groups. You know, one of the big ones is the Susan B. Komen Foundation to raise awareness of women's breast cancer. Like, I don't know anybody that doesn't know it exists. What is that? What is that? And they see all of this money goes through these organizations, and when their job is to raise awareness, that's nice and vague. What's the metric of if they're accomplishing their mission or not? And yet a lot of money is changing hands. But see, nobody's talking about that. You know, when you have a story like this, you know, I bring up a question like that. How much money goes through this group? Where does it go? What's the purpose of it? Because if it's something vague, like raising awareness, you know, there's no actual definitive standard to use to say whether they're actually accomplishing their mission. Yet there's a lot of money going through here. Where's the money come from? Where's it going? Who's winding up with it? See, instead, you're not talking, you know, nobody's talking about that. They tantalize you with a transgender story. Oh my gosh. See, the big dust up is they put this transgender in as the spokesperson. And, I'm more interested in, how much money goes to this group? Where does it come from? Who gets it? What's the purpose of it? And yeah, those questions don't get asked. But hey, we, you know, we can talk about an outrageous that they have a transgender spokesperson. And again, one more kudos to this person. Well, I can't speak to their motivations, but they did step down. They said, you know, it's best for the organization. This is the hubbub. I'll step away from it. And, you know, I guess credit where it's due. But I think most of these organizations are scam anyway. So I don't really care.
Well, you brought up experience there, Grandpa. And really, it's peak democracy, isn't it? Putting somebody with no experience whatsoever into the role, exactly as they do in the government. They put someone with no experience at all in that area and no expertise in it whatsoever, and then they put them there as the secretary of that area, meaning that they lead the whole department to do with that. And that's democracy. And anything else, people will say, well, that's fascism. Putting somebody in the role who's actually good at the job, who's shown that they're good at doing it for many years, well, that's not democratic, is it? I mean, you look at Putin, he's been doing the job for, what, 20 years, 25 years? He knows what he's doing. You ask the Russian people, well, it's not really very democratic, is it? You've had the same president for the last 25 years. And they'll turn around and say, yes, well, he knows how to do the job. That's why we want him to stay there, because he knows how to do the job. And then you can look over here in Britain and they're just chop and change them all the time. Every 6 months, somebody will be the foreign secretary, then they'll be the home secretary, then they'll be the in charge of the money, the finances, then they'll be in charge of prisons. And none of them are actually know what it is they're talking about. They're just puppets. And it's peak democracy. So it's not so much transphobia as just democratic values, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And meanwhile, here in the U.S., you know, our Secretary of Defense, who has unilaterally now changed his own title to Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, he's a Fox News guy. This guy doesn't know anything about running the Pentagon. You know, yeah, I mean, that's a really good example of what you're saying, Sven. I mean, meanwhile, you know, like you say, somebody will criticize and say, oh, well, Putin's been in there a long time. Well, the people are happy with the job he's doing. Meanwhile, we've got Pete Hegseth running the Department of Defense, War, whatever you decide to call it. And the guy's a news show host. I mean, he's, you know, he said at best an idiot and at worst a nut job. And yeah, he's running the Pentagon, and we wonder why things are going so smashingly well.
I didn't know that. I thought I'd seen him before, but I thought he was a military man. I didn't realize he was just a news host.
No, he was a host on one of the Fox News shows. I think he did like a very small, you know, minimum term in the military. But I mean, it's not like this guy was, you know, spent 20 years in the military and, you know, was a paratrooper or a Delta Force or something. I mean, he was like, I don't know, did 2 or 3 years, I think, as guard duty or something. I mean, just a nothing. And Mel, his whole thing where Trump found him is he was a Fox News host, and I guess Trump liked his coverage that he got. So you get to be the head of the Pentagon, the head of the Department of Defense now.
I thought he must be a general or something. I thought he must know what he's doing.
No, he has no idea what he's doing. He is zero, zilch, no idea of what he's doing, and it shows. And what's amazing is he's low IQ enough that he doesn't, to use one of Trump's terms, he's low IQ enough that he has no idea that he doesn't have any idea what he's doing. You know, if you put me in that job, I'm not bragging, if you put me in that job, I do have enough intelligence to know that I would have no idea what I'm doing here. So, you know, I would at least comprehend that you've put me in a job I have no idea. Pete Hegseth doesn't have that level of intelligence. They put him in that job and he thinks he's a perfect fit. He thinks he has got it all figured out. There was a story, we're kind of getting a little off topic, but you know, there was a story came out in the, I believe it was the New York Times. And basically when Israel came in, when Netanyahu and the head of Mossad came in and sold this whole thing to Trump, you know, like everybody in the cabinet was like, this is a bad idea. Don't do it. The one person who was all for it was Hegseth. He was like, we can do it, sir. Yeah, great idea. You know, I mean, anybody with any intelligence at all was like, no, don't fall into the trap. This is a Netanyahu thing. Don't do it. And not Hegseth. He was the one voice that thought it was an awesome idea. Yeah, he's a TV host. The guy has no clue what he's doing, and he doesn't even have enough intelligence to know that he doesn't know what he's doing. And that's kind of a scary situation.
Well, the democracy pigeons are coming home to roost, aren't they? This is the end results of it, I think. Trannies in endometriosis charities and Fox News hosts leading the American army. Well, another side of this democracy, which is everybody is equal, they're all a blank slate. We've actually gone a little bit further now, and white people are worth less than non-white people. So we have this anti-white discrimination that goes on, as we mentioned earlier, with these diversity quotas. And I discovered a really insidious piece of anti-white discrimination yesterday. This is really quite shocking when you think about it. Durham University has been accused of anti-white discrimination as British Asian standards are found to have been accepted with lower grades. The Russell Group Institution launched a new initiative that provides British Asian, and I must say British Asian means Muslim effectively. It doesn't mean Chinese or Japanese. In Britain, it means people from Pakistan, Afghanistan, places like that. Don't ask me why, but our understanding of Asian is different to the American understanding of Asian. So this isn't the Chinese or the Japanese being let in without the, you know, without actually making the grade. This is Muslims effectively. The Russell Group Institution launched a new initiative that provides British Asian students from state schools with entry offers typically two grades below standard requirements. So instead of getting an A, all they needed to get was a C. The Asian Access Program, introduced for the first time this year, covers sought-after courses, including psychology, law, and politics. And of course, they're the ones that really shape society. Law, politics, psychology, you got medicine, you got law, you got the politicians. I mean, these are the important courses. It's the people that finish these courses that shape the direction of the nation, effectively. And what they're doing here is they're accepting people onto these courses that have two grades lower. They're accepting them with a C instead of an A, effectively. Participants received a complimentary summer school experience. So they got free summer school, free accommodation, free travel expenses and meals, all covered by the institution. And then they were allowed to study at the institution if they only got a C instead of an A. According to the university, the scheme aims to support students who are typically underrepresented in higher education, and particularly at Durham. Those who complete the programme successfully receive a guaranteed alternative offer with reduced grade requirements. The initiative has sparked immediate controversy, with critics questioning whether such measures are necessary, given existing university admission statistics. Official government figures appear to undercut the programme's stated rationale of addressing underrepresentation in higher education. Data from 2024 reveals that 51% of Asian state school pupils across England secured university places, compared with just 29% of white students. Asians probably make up 10% of the population, yet they're making up 50% of the university places. White people make up 75% of the population, yet they're only now making up 29%. Of the university places. And I'm not sure, they haven't actually put here about being on school meals, because it is white students that get free school meals that are the most overlooked and the most underrepresented. But they haven't actually put that there. And I mean, that might be what they're referring to. They just left that bit out, because they're saying that it's the poorer white working class that are most underrepresented, that are only about 29% of them make it. But according to this, it's just out of the general population. You've got twice as many Asians, British Asians or Muslims, going to university than you have white people now. And yet what they're doing at this university is allowing them in with a C grade instead of an A, free summer school, free accommodation and guaranteed placements. Chinese pupils recorded the highest acceptance rate at 66.1%, which you would expect because they have a high average IQ, while black pupils stood at 48%. And I should imagine universities have probably got the same programs in place for black pupils as well. And you bear in mind, it's the white pupils that have got the highest average IQ. Chinese are slightly higher, 1 or 2 points, Chinese, Japanese. They've got a very high IQ. For them, so only be making up 29% of the university places. So that's the people most likely to be able to succeed are least likely to get a place at university. And the people with a mid-range IQ, which is about 85, 90, they're the ones that are getting the most state school places, and not because they're getting the grades, because they're literally getting a C grade instead of an A. Now, this is just absolutely shocking to me that this can be going on, and yet they think it's a good thing. And as is pointed out here, all you have to do is look at the statistics to see that it's not actually so. They're not helping an underrepresented group. They're helping a group that is already massively overrepresented. And possibly the massive overrepresentation is because there are other universities that are also doing this and letting them get in with a C grade instead of an A grade. In fact, I'm pretty much certain that would have to be the case for them to have so many Muslims at these universities now, because there's only a small portion of them that are going to have high enough IQs to get A grades. So it can't just be Durham that's doing this. But it is absolutely shocking and scandalous, and just another absurdity about the modern world. Grandpa, what do you make of this?
Well, I don't find it shocking. I mean, the great quote unquote great replacement conspiracy theory is pretty much just evidence. You know, I mean, people, you know, lots of people are talking about that now because it's just so obvious. Now, to be fair, going through these statistics, you know, talking about percentages, you were talking about the percentage of the white population versus the underrepresentation in school. And I have to wonder, though, how much of that is skewed because it doesn't account for the aging demographic. And this is one of the things I think gets overlooked in these demographic time bomb predictions and, you know, people pointing out demographics is, you know, you can look at a country and say, oh, well, they're still majority white. But if the majority of your majority are old people, I mean, that's a time bomb in itself, because they're going to die off. So the realistic demographic representation, when you discount the older people, is actually worse than it appears. You know, I mean, because old people are not going to want to change the system. Old people are just, by their very nature, they want to maintain the status quo for the rest of their lives as much as they can. So when it comes to like a discussion of political change, and you say, well, we have a majority white population, why don't they advocate to change the system? Well, because if the majority of your majority are actually old people, they're not going to do that. They're just not. They're not going to overturn the apple cart. That comes from the youth. That's why if you look at history, it's always driven, you know, a revolution or an overturning of the current system to bring in a new system is always driven, not at the top, but, all, you know, the momentum is driven by younger people. That's where the energy always comes from. And when you have an aging demographic, they're not going to do that. You just don't have that energy. So kind of getting back on point, I think some of these percentages, to be fair, are probably skewed because there's fewer younger white people. You might have a higher percentage overall of a white population, but the percentage of those that are actually young people in this group is much smaller. So I think that could skew these percentages, numbers that you're seeing. And I'm not, of course, obviously, I'm not defending what the school is absurd. You should just have the tests. If you pass the test, I don't care who you are. You know, maybe I'm showing my age. But, you know, that's why the Chinese students and you know, that's why the Chinese students have a high deal, because and no one questions it, because we all know that they will work themselves to the bones just studying 24/7. And, you know, they probably earned it. Nobody even raises an eyebrow at it. And yet you see them, they put in this and put these lower standards in. And, you know, for representation, whatever. Again, what does that mean? And they say, well, we're addressing underrepresentation. Representing who? Nobody. They're just, they either get in the school or they don't. This could be another one of those blessings in disguise. I think a lot of these universities are really becoming irrelevant. These college degrees, what kind of degrees are they getting? You know, are they really, I know here, I don't know how it is over there, but in the U.S., you know, going to university represents taking on a huge amount of debt. And a lot of these people graduate with degrees and they find out that they're worthless. They don't really, you know, they either have a degree that doesn't have any real world application or, yeah, sure, even if they have a degree that's got some application, there's, you know, 500,000 other people that just hit the job market with the exact same degree. So good luck with all that. And finally, another episode of, oh, this is controversial and people don't like it. And it doesn't do a damn thing. You know, they tell us this democracy thing. What does democracy mean? You were talking about that, you know, democracy. And what does it mean? You know, it doesn't mean anything about the government answering to the people, because once again, they do something or, you know, promote something that people don't like, and it doesn't matter, you know, and you see it all the time. You know, I was looking at a story yesterday. You know, they're building all these data centers here in the U.S. Nobody wants it. They're putting them in. They're giant. They suck up all the electricity. They suck up all the water. They're destroying the environment, the actual environment, not climate change nonsense. And the people that live in the areas where they want to build these data centers, they don't like it. And they all go out and they all protest. And it makes time and time and time again, zero, absolutely not, no difference at all, ever. I don't know when a protest has ever made any difference. Which should bring people to stop and ask, just what is this democracy thing? Well, let's have a definition of it. They throw the term around, our democracy, our democratic values. I think it's time for people to stop and demand a definition. You know, what exactly does this mean? Because it does not have anything to do with the will of the people. Time and again, you have a controversial story like this, people don't like it. Is the government, the university, because it's the same thing. Are they going to reverse course? No, nobody reads this and thinks, well, they're really going to change their policy next week because the people have spoken. No, they're not. You don't think that. I don't think that. Nobody listening thinks that. When people go out and they protest because they don't want a data center built, we could do a whole show on these data centers and what they're for. But nobody wants these things. And it doesn't matter. They build them right next to people's houses. They don't care. They don't care what they're doing to the environment. They don't care that they demand more electricity than the grid can support. They don't care what it does to the environment. And they don't care how many people show up and protest. And they go, all these people line up at the public hearing and tell the politicians, we don't want this. We demand you not do it. It's going to destroy our way of life. Please, we don't want the data center. And at the end of the day, you get the data center. So it's time for people to ask for a definition, because democracy, however it's defined, it has absolutely zero to do with the will of the people.
You know, they're bragging about building a data center over here at the moment in Britain. You brought up demographics there, and I think that is relevant in the hospital wards. White babies now only make up 51% and 49% are non-white. So white babies are almost in the minority already. And you could say probably at school age, it's probably about 60-40, probably about 60% white, 40% non-white. But what we're actually talking about here is the percentage of that group. So it's saying that with white students, it's only 29% of white people of student age are going to university. It's 66% of Chinese students are going to university, and 51% of Muslims that are effectively going to university now at that age. So the fact that white people are only like 60% of the population, that's not really that relevant, because they're not giving that percentage as part of all the students as a whole. It's just the percentage of white people, effectively only 29% are now going to university. But I think you're quite right there. These grades that they're giving out, these degrees, they're now worthless, and they're worthless because anybody can go there and get them now. And it used to be, if you went to university, you were in a minority, you were the most intelligent of the most intelligent. But now what it means is, if you very likely were given a place at the university, even though you only got a grade C instead of a grade A, and because they charge people for these courses, they can't very well then fail them at the end of it. So you're going to get less and less intelligent people with more and more of these degrees. And I think white people can see that that's happening, and they can see that it's just not worth it. You know, ladening themselves with debt for the rest of their lives to pay back this student debt, it's just it's just not worth doing it. But to hear that non-whites are being allowed in with a grade C when you have to get a grade A to get in as well, I mean, that is pretty scandalous. And you can imagine that the next step up from that would be to mark down the white students as well. Because you couldn't have like these Asian students being let in there without actually making the grade, and then they fail at the university. They have to find some way to get them to still pass at the university. And, you know, the way of doing that might very well be to let them pass, even though they haven't actually passed. They might be actually inflating the results of their tests when they're at the university, not even before, if you see what I mean. It's just how absurd our modern world is today and how anti-white it all is. And of course, if you had a nationalist government in place, this sort of thing would not be happening. And our universities would be for our own people, and they wouldn't have to take out loans to go to it, because we would understand that the people going to university are our investment for the future. They're our brightest pupils, our brightest children, and we want to educate them to the highest standard so that they can come out with new inventions that are going to enrich the rest of the country. So for each one that we paid for to go through the university, we're going to get infinitely more back out of them when they put all that education that they've had and all that knowledge, when they apply it to designing things and working on products that are going to improve our lives. That's the way that it needs to be looked at. But of course, it's not looked at like that. It's just looked at democratically. Effectively, each person that goes there is the same. They're just a wage, basically, for the university staff. It's just a business now. It's not a place of learning. It's a business, and it's a place to censor people and get them to self-censor. They're indoctrination centers. It was a time we used to go to university and you used to have your views challenged. Nowadays, you don't have your views challenged because that would require a trigger warning.
Yeah, and again, we need a definition of democracy. I think it's past time that the people say, you know, and you would get this if you had a functioning free press, you know, that would, when none of these politicians is mouthing off about our democracy, stop and say, define that for me. And they wouldn't be able to, because it sure as heck doesn't have anything to do with the will of the people. All of this stuff, this is not the system malfunctioning. This is the system operating as it's designed to do. It's just that what they tell you it's designed to do is a lie. That's why too many people, they look at the system doing these things and they improperly think there's something wrong with the system. You know, there's something wrong. It's not working. And it's working as designed. It's just that what they told you it's designed to do is a lie. That's why I say you come back to, it's a fundamental problem with the system itself. That's why protesting is not going to make a difference. Voting harder is not going to make a difference. It's the system itself has got to collapse, basically. And when it completely fails and grinds to a halt, then you have the opportunity for another system to come in and replace it. But the idea that you're going to tinker around and repair this system, it's doing what it's designed to do. It's just that, again, what we've told all of us that it's designed to do was a lie, to represent the people, that the people, the government answers to the people. Looking back on that, that's just such a laughable thing they told us growing up.
Yeah, getting them to define democracy would really pin them down, wouldn't it? I think perhaps we'll use that for the title of this podcast. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.